episode of the Hardwood Knox podcast. Today, I'm Dan Favalli. I will not be here with Adam Frommel or Andy Bailey, but we are lucky enough to be joined by Posting and Toasting's co-editor, Joe Flynn. You can get Adam on Twitter, at China Joe Flynn. We'll be pimping that throughout the podcast. Joe, how are you doing?
I'm feeling pretty good. As good as someone who is about to discuss the Knicks can feel.
Yes, spoiler alert, we are going to be discussing the Knicks, who have been so fantastically bad this season. It's infuriating. It's probably more frustrating for people who expected them to be really good, but I do believe you were one of the more realistic ones heading into the season, where we all kind of knew they weren't going to be that great. But they're sitting at 22-29. They're only a game and a half out of the playoffs. Before we get into any nitty-gritty parts, what is the most frustrating thing about this team for you this season?
I guess the defense would be the number one answer, but the defense always sucks.
Right.
I've kind of gotten used to it. I would say the offense at times has been more frustrating because they should be better than what they are. The defense, I mean, you look at the guys on that roster, especially with Joakim Noah dragging
Joakim Noah, worst contract,
a bloody stump
in the
where
NBA.
A leg should be.
Like his contract
is close.
I would say it has to be number one.
He's in the top.
I would say it has to be. Like, what contract is worse than Joakim Noah's right now? 4 years and 72.6 million for the 31-year-old corpse of Joakim Noah.
Yeah, I'm. I mean, off the top of my head, I can't think of any. So
I mean, like, there's
probably number one.
Yeah, it has to be up there. Timofey Mozgov's was bad. I mean, that was a bad one.
Ooh. Yeah.
Jan Mahinmi hasn't played this season. That was another bad one. A lot of people don't like Evan Turner's, but I don't know that you could trade Joakim Noah for nothing. Like, I just...
Yeah, you couldn't.
So,
then again, I don't think you could trade Evan Turner.
No, I mean, hey, if they want to do a Joakim Noah for Evan Turner swap, I'd consider it. Some more defensive versatility on the perimeter, which has been a disaster this year. Rose looks like he's checked out on that end. Like, he knows he's not
coming
back
next year. On defense, he never checked in.
It kind of makes you appreciate, and I guess I was younger, so I didn't watch as much of him then, but was he ever a good defender? Like, people tried to paint him as one in Tom Thibodeau's system, but it makes you appreciate prime Joakim Noah, Luol Deng, and Jimmy Butler for how much they had to cover up for this dude who just doesn't even... Maybe it was different, but like, when he tries, he even bounces off screens.
He tries like in the worst way possible. Like, he goes for steals at the worst moment. He lunges the wrong way. He plays the ball handler off to the wrong, you know, the wrong hand. He just, it's a cavalcade of mistakes.
He doesn't help. And Melo's guilty of this too, but like Melo, when he does help, he like fake runs and doesn't put a hand up, like when he's closing out on shooters.
Yeah.
And I never understood it. Kind of speaking of Melo though, he's been in the news lately because it's February and we were closing out on February, so it's annual. The Knicks should trade Carmelo Anthony to so-and-so. Will he waive his no-trade clause for these teams? The Clippers have been most heavily linked to him with a little bit of the Cavaliers. The offers that we're seeing are built around Austin Rivers, Jamal Crawford, maybe Wesley Johnson. J.J. Redick hasn't even been involved in the offers. We know none of the big three, excuse me, will be going back to New York or elsewhere. Can you justify to me making this deal? I don't think it's going to go through, but can you even justify the Knicks just pulling the trigger on this framework where I haven't heard anything about picks outside of the second round going their way.
Well, no. I mean, it's no. Just that the thing about Austin Rivers is he's become such a joke that he is, you know, he has developed into a decent rotation player. But then that's the headliner. I mean, that's, you know, that's the number one guy you're getting back. And Jamal Crawford is up there in worse contracts. And Wesley Johnson, the problem with the Clippers is they don't have a pick to offer until 2021, so a first rounder.
And I know. I think someone said this to me on Twitter, and I firmly disagree about it. I'm not. If Melo's going to the Clippers, I'm not banking on Chris Paul or even Blake Griffin leaving this summer. You can't tell me, hey, the Clippers are going to be really bad in 3 or 4 years. Like, you know, and that would even make it more puzzling, though, because Phil Jackson's not going to be here in 3 or 4 years.
I'll
be
That's what is really amazing about it, the idea that he would I have to say, I think there's no way that Paul is going to be able to carry the team as much as he will, like, in 2020, 21.
But if you have,
he's already has injury problems. He's just, for his size, it's like that would be unprecedented almost.
But I think the thing for me is that let's assume Blake and DJ would still be in their prime. Like, I think that, and if you pair them with aging Melo, assuming he stays when his contract's up, aging Chris Paul, you know, yeah, you're right. This team has had injury problems, but if everyone stays healthy, that's not a lottery team. So you're still the headlining pick. Is not only is it not a top pick, but it's this mid-end pick that you don't get for almost half a decade.
I disagree with you a bit that I think that in 4 years, even Griffin and Jordan, I mean, how effective will Jordan be without Chris Paul? Like, how, you know, Griffin is already, you know, he misses half the year, basically every season now. How is he going to be, especially because, you know, how is he going to be when his athleticism starts to go? I mean, he has the jump shot and everything, but, you know, how is he going to defend? He has real short arms, but it's hard to, and he doesn't quite have that 3-point range. So even if we disagree that they might not be, you know, it might not be a net situation where they end up just horrible. 4 years from now. So, like, what GM does that?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so I guess I kind of agree with you on the pick front, but with the way this offer is being structured, like, it's so flagrantly bad, that pick would probably be, like, if it's unprotected, then I guess maybe at least you can say you got a pick. But I don't, it's like you said at the end, like, Phil Jackson's old enough to where I don't know why he would be thinking 4 and 5 years down the line. And it bothers me because I know people have been saying that he tried to sign Austin Rivers and that Austin Rivers has gotten better. Austin Rivers has improved while normally playing beside 1 to 3 superstars and facing second units. And it's not like he looks great when he's replacing Chris Paul. And his contract, yes, it's cheaper, but it's not any shorter. And it's the same with Jamal Crawford. So I just,
Crawford's contract is horrible.
Right.
Oh, my God.
So it's just, and they're talking about a team that would just take him on. I'm like, what team? They even said the Nets. And in my head, I'm like, why would the Nets even want to take him on? Like, they have a bunch of these young guards that I'm sure they would rather see than Jamal Crawford, who's a very cool dude, but his contract is just bat crap terrible.
It is, yeah. It's ridiculous. They just, was it this offseason where they signed him? Was it 3 years, $42 million?
Yeah, that was this offseason. That was after...
That
was after 2 years of, like, will we trade him, won't we trade him? I was almost surprised to see him go back there. But when they were going to offer him that kind of money, some of these contracts that Doc Rivers gives out.
Yeah, you got to – if Doc Rivers is signing the checks, you go back to the Clippers.
Right, but I just – does he, like, have the – like, does he even plan on being here by the end of them? Because he just gives out these deals are so, like that – remember that Jared Dudley trade where he gave up a first-round pick to get rid of Jared Dudley?
So that was the whole thing.
And this is the guy that's going to fleece you in a Melo trade who he hasn't been this bad on defense, I don't think, ever. And sometimes he looks completely disengaged. It doesn't even seem like, oh, he's trying and not grasping it. He just looks so disinterested at points. But he's still a top 20 offensive player. Like, if you want to remove him from that superstar, but, like, he's still one of the best offensive players in the league. And you're even considering, like, moving him for absolute dreck is mind-boggling to me. And this is where I guess it comes to a real debatable head. The Knicks don't need to move Melo, right? Like, is he really impeding their rebuild that much?
The Knicks 100% do not have to trade Melo. Kristaps loves him. Kristaps, told reporters, I don't want Melo to leave. And his teammates really love him. You know, it's not like a Chicago Bulls situation where all the players are fighting. The Knicks, you know, they like each other. They're just not that good. And the one guy in the organization who really doesn't seem to like Melo is Phil Jackson.
Which doesn't make that much sense to me. I just don't see how he would have impeded Phil. Like, Phil didn't have to re-sign him then or give him the no-trade clause. Maybe keeping Melo was sort of mandated by James Dolan before Phil ever officially took the job, but the fact that he wouldn't want him so badly that he's just going to trade him for pieces that don't advance or even – they don't advance your rebuild. And I don't think we've reached that point even with Melo's salary, and I don't think the perception around the league is as such that, hey, this guy really isn't worth anything.
Yeah. I mean, people kind of – a lot of people, you know, on Twitter, they will say – you know, Melo, oh, what is he worth? He's got a high salary and doesn't play defense very well or at all. But I think around the league, his reputation is still pretty high. And, I mean, I think people realize, you know, there are not a lot of folks who could get you, you know, consistent 30 points. And now that his three-point shooting is trending up, he was really efficient in January. He was shooting like 42% or something from the three, and averaging, especially the second half of the month, damn near 30 points a game. There are not a lot of guys who can do that for you. So that is a very unique skill set and a valuable one. So I think, you know, in the league, they understand that. But is there a match? I don't really think there is this season. So it's just kind of, you know, if they're going to do a trade, they might, you know, why not look at Kylo Quinn or someone else who actually they could move.
And maybe actually get a pick back for, like, maybe someone's willing to give you a low end first for O'Quinn, or I used to think Lance Thomas was worth something, but he's injured too much. So I don't know why you wouldn't go that route. And you made the point, and it's a good one. The right trade probably isn't out there, especially in the middle of the season. And there's nothing, you're not hurting yourself, I think, is the bigger thing to me by keeping Melo. Because I said this, and I'm not sure if it makes complete sense, but their ceiling with him seems like it would be higher than their basement is lower without him. Just because if Rose stays healthy and that offense eventually translates into something. The biggest mistake that I think the Knicks probably made was pairing him and Rose together, because playing Melo beside a pass-first point guard is a great idea. And you can see flashes of it when he hits these spot-up threes off kickouts or that extra pass. But Rose isn't that point guard. And to me, that's why he should even be valuable both inside and outside the organization, because if you put him beside that player, and we can use Chris Paul as the example, or we can use whoever really, a pass-first point guard, that unlocks sort of a different level, and it's something you pointed out. It almost unlocks Olympic Melo. Won't be as easy, but that's a style he's fit for.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that kind of really annoys me. A criticism of Melo that annoys me is the idea that he would never accept anything less than being like the alpha scorer. And like there, I said, I think on Twitter, we have three Olympic tournaments worth of information on Melo's ability to, you know, just even coming off the bench as just a secondary scorer, spot up shooter. He's willing to do that if for the right team. He hasn't found the right team, and I don't know if he'd do that. I don't know if that will ever happen for him on the Knicks, but you know, there is the right match out there for him. I just don't think it's going to happen right now. And honestly, it seems like Phil is going to be wasting his time, you know, just spending the next few weeks. I don't even know what he's going to, what convinced Melo to go to the Magic or something. I don't know what.
Yeah, I mean, and the market is limited, but if we fast forward to this summer, and there are two scenarios here where one, you know, he doesn't, if you don't move him now, you can try and move him over the offseason. And in that scenario, teams are going to have more cap flexibility. You might also have some desperate squads who whiffed in free agency and might be more amenable to trading Anthony. And when he's just gone through another season of likely missing the playoffs or getting bounced in the first round, if the Knicks even get there, maybe he's more open to talking about other teams outside those three that keep coming up, Boston, the Clippers, and the Cavaliers. And so waiting seems like his value's not, I know people say, well, his value's only going to get lower, but you can get an Austin Rivers headline deal for Melo over the offseason. Yeah. Like, I'm not going to buy into, like, oh, we need to trade him because this is the best offer that's out there. If that's the best offer that's out there, wait until the summer.
Yeah. If that's the best offer that's out there, I would never trade him ever because it's just, I mean, that's just like, especially if they take Jamal Crawford, that's just like kneecapping the, that's what happened with Noah, where they just, we made a move. Okay, we traded for Derrick Rose. Oh, now we need a center. Okay, we're going to give an old washed up guy a bunch of years. So
to play our best player's best position. One of the worst decisions ever.
You could make an argument that he is the fourth best center on the team right now.
Which is absurd.
Yeah. It's cool. I mean, in one way, it's cool that they have done a pretty good job finding guys who can play center. It's just not the guy they paid $72 million to.
No, and that contract will never be justifiable. Whatever leadership he might bring behind closed doors, however well he even plays on an individual level, he's just clogging up Kristaps to the five, which then clogs up Melo to the four. So it has this chain reaction that's just terrible. The other thing the Knicks could try, though, on the Melo front is if you're not going to move him, because like you said, if that's the offer, if that's always going to be the level you're working with, because he won't go anywhere but the Clippers or maybe the Cavaliers, and you're just going to get these terrible offers, and this is the best one you're going to see, you keep him. He's probably going to opt out or use his early termination option before 2018 free agency. And if he doesn't, like, he's not going to add that many wins to your bottom line at this point. Like, the Knicks are contending for one of the three worst records in the Eastern Conference with him right now. And maybe you go into free agency because Phil Jackson has torched many a bridge in free agency with his comments about other players. So at least you have him to sell free agents on. And this summer, there's going to be a ton of point guards out there. So maybe you finally find a point guard that fits with him, which is, to wrap up my rambling, that's the thing that Melo has had absolutely no control over since he got to New York and is not on him. The Knicks continue to surround him with crap ball handlers. Like, and he needs someone who can get into the lane like Rose, but then who's more willing to pass, which is just not Rose.
And defend.
Well, I mean, yeah, Melo needs to defend himself, so I'm not about to say you need to get someone who plays defense because he needs it.
Well, they need some on-the-ball defense. I mean, yeah, Melo has checked out. But he actually, last year, he was really pretty good for much of the year on defense. So it just feels like, he's checked out a bit.
Well, the other thing has to be they were, like, one of the slowest teams in the league last year, and that has to be easier on him from possession to possession, to where I actually haven't even looked at what they rank in pace this year, but it has
pretty,
to be high.
It's pretty, it's surprisingly high. It's like middle of the pack.
Yeah, so it's 13th. Knicks, it's very high. Yeah, so 13th. Yeah. And last year, I would hazard they were in the bottom three. So when you up that speed and you're getting older, like that might have made it easier for him to defend.
And also, the league is just, I mean, people know how to attack the Knicks. They go smaller, and the Knicks don't respond. So you have Kristaps guarding basically a small forward playing power forward when he's 7'3". And then you have Melo chasing around a bigger guard when he is, old and much bigger than that. So everybody knows how to attack the Knicks.
Right.
And the Knicks don't ever do anything about it.
That it was the net game that they almost lost the other night. There was a point where, and I love Hernan Gomez, and I want to see him get more burn, but where you had him and Kyle O'Quinn, or no, it was him and Noah on the floor at the same time. Maybe it wasn't the Nets game, but that has to be.
No, they started Hernan Gomez and Noah against the Wizards.
Yes, that's what it was. That was terrible because all the Wizards do is play small because they figured out that's how they're good.
Yeah. So that was just, that was.
And how do you not counter throughout the game? And this is where some of the stuff Jeff Hornacek has done, like where he like came and called the team out for defense, like I kind of respected. But some of his rotations are unpredictable at this point. And his decisions that he misses on, sometimes they're so obvious where it's like, we really should move. He talks about moving Melo to the four, but then just doesn't do it. And
That was just really annoying. When Noah was injured, he said, oh, when Noah comes back, maybe he shouldn't start, and then just started him. So,
and then some of the best defense Melo's played this season came against Paul Millsap in that quadruple overtime game in Atlanta. Like, he played some good defense on Paul Millsap. Millsap still made a ton of shots, and he played well throughout regulation, but like Melo was like able to keep up with him a bit more, and he looked a little bit more engaged. And Millsap is probably, that's an extreme power forward. Like, he's super mobile. You'll get some other guys who aren't going to be as good.
Yeah. And especially his combination of size and speed, where he is, you know, he is bigger than Melo and quick and very skilled. So yeah, that makes more sense than him guarding. God, I don't even know who. I can't even think of some of the guards that they have him on. But it doesn't matter anyway. They switch so much that they end up with Noah on a point guard. And
well, it's great because when it's Rose's primary defender, and this, it gets me so mad whenever they're defending the pick and roll, is that like it seems like he's supposed to switch, but he doesn't, and he always ends up, he tries to go around the screen. Sometimes he ends up behind his guy, and they've all of a sudden double-teamed the ball handler, and they're getting these wide-open three-point looks off of it, the other team, or the other guy's rolling toward the basket. And I don't know, I'm not going to pretend to be an X's and O's savant, but you would think that Rose is just supposed to not do that and slide, because every other person looks like they switch, and Rose just is like the theory, well, we need to double whoever Rose's guy is. I don't understand it at all.
Yeah, well, Kurt Rambis is fixing that defense. Give it time. Give it another couple of months. He'll figure it out.
Well, Jeff Hornacek will probably be fired sometime in May, and then that's when we'll hear about how Rambis is going to take the head coaching reins and fix everything.
Yeah. All he needs is his fourth chance, and he'll figure everything out. Now, but yeah, the thing about Hornacek that I like is that every once in a while, he, more than any Knicks coach in recent memory, will take out the veterans and not put them back in if they are not playing well or not playing hard. That's what happened in the Nets game. He took out Lee and Melo, and he just went with Justin Holiday and Hernan Gomez in their places, and it worked well, and he didn't even bring them back. And he did that with Ron Baker over Rose a couple of times.
Yeah, that Bucks game is the biggest memory, where he just let Derrick Rose watch from the bench as Ron Baker tore it up.
Yeah, and that's, you know, no Knicks coach in recent memory has done that. But he doesn't, I mean, he's not even that consistent doing that. Sometimes,
no, Hernan Gomez, like, sometimes will probably he just get gets so pissed off. Yeah, I don't understand that. I think you were the one that pointed this out on Twitter the one time. Hernan Gomez had a phenomenal game, and then he went to a DNP coach's decision.
Oh, yeah. Against in Boston, and they won, and he had a double-double, and the next game he didn't play. It was like, wow.
That's the logic I don't understand. And then you don't know who's like going to be like the second or third guy off the bench ever. Like, he goes through these spurts where he falls in and out of love with Kuz. Sometimes we see Baker. Vujicic came in the other night, and I always get scared when he comes in and does anything good, because I don't want the coach to fall in love with playing him.
Oh, because I've kind of checked out on their results for recent vintage Knicks, because they have been so frustrating. There's something life-affirming about Sasha Vujicic coming in a game and firing like off-balance threes and just
getting two plays.
You know, playing, living every minute like it's his last in the NBA, because it should be. I wouldn't want him, if I cared about the Knicks winning more, yeah, I wouldn't want to see him, but you know, 2 4-point plays, you can't teach that. He had that the other day.
I'm not even sure, like, I think opposing teams get confused that he's on the team or like what he does. Like,
yep.
I was at Nets practice the other day, and it was right after the Knicks game, and someone asked Kenny Atkinson about, what do you think about Sasha, like, in his leg kicks on threes? And he just like looked so confused And he said he no commented it, but he just looked so confused as to why, one, why are you asking me about Sasha? And two, he no commented it because, like, Sasha's just, it's just so bizarre that he gets these random minutes and then he just has this unconditional green light. And I hope it doesn't lead to him subsequently being put in the rotation.
Yeah. I think he, I would prefer him not be on the roster, but his usefulness is in the idea that by putting him in, you should be able to embarrass everyone else. Like, like, you all are so bad right now. I'm going to put in Sasha Vujacic, and the team will actually play better because that's how terrible you are. I think that is, it's in a way, it's an effective tool because nobody wants to be the guy who was benched for Sasha Vujacic.
That's, so. Yeah, you know, Ron Baker is one thing. That's a good point. But, like, you got benched for Sasha Vujacic, one of the biggest punchlines in the NBA. That's got to be some sort of a motivator.
Yeah, I would hope so. But, I mean, Rose didn't seem to be motivated by the Baker thing. He just disappeared for a little while, so.
Rose's, complete disinterest in playing defense this year, I don't fully understand. I knew he was never going to be a good playmaker in terms of setting up his teammates because it's a contract year, and he seems like one of those guys who still thinks that we define players by their scoring numbers. But why wouldn't you try on defense in a contract year when you're reportedly looking for a max contract that no one in their right mind is going to give you? And the follow-up question to that, are you convinced that the Knicks aren't going to bring him back? I want to be, but I'm just not sure. I could see a scenario in which they do.
Okay. Well, that's a two-parter. One, I think that Derrick Rose honestly believes that he is still a max player and that teams view him as a max player. And that is one of the reasons that he doesn't try on defense. He's really oblivious in a lot of ways. And two, I really think the relationship was kind of torched last month when he was pissed off about the Ron Baker thing. And then he didn't show up for a game or tell anybody. And he came back and he actually played pretty well for a few games. But I just feel like that they're not going to bring him back. And I was worried. I was so worried about it in December. But I just can't see him coming back after what, you know, what has gone down. Honestly, like, the thing for him, I don't think he will do this. But, I mean, he should go to a better team and be a sixth man. You know, like, scoring off the bench, he would be very, very good at that. And that is his role at this point, but he doesn't seem to understand that. Some players just don't get it.
No, I mean, he's on course to become pretty much the next Rajon Rondo. Don't know, like, he'll get NBA contracts and they'll be worth money, but he's not going to make your team better. And I was worried that there was a point this season where the Knicks were like third in the East and their record still wasn't great, but when they were third in the East and I was like, oh man, they're going to max out Derrick Rose.
Yeah. It was Mark Berman when the New York posted their New Year's predictions for 2017. And he had something like the Knicks will sign Derrick Rose to a $150 million contract.
Oh God.
And I was like, are you trying to give me a heart attack? Are you being serious? Is this a joke? What's happening here? So, yeah, in a way, January, it kind of showed Rose's true colors, that he is, he's a little bit flaky and he's just, you know, he's not a really guy you want to invest in at this point in his career, even beyond the injuries.
Yeah. And when he plays well by his standards, it doesn't equate to Knicks success, which bothers me the most. He's, and I just looked this up, when he takes more than 15 shots, there's 6 and 16. Like, that's just, and it might even be worse when he shoots more. Like, if I just adjust it, like it's just, it's ridiculous. Whenever he scores a lot or shoots a lot, it seems like they lose. And I'm looking at that, when he attempts 18 or more shots, they're 2-11.
Yeah, it's That's pretty bad. He's I really think like his upside at this point in his career is a Jamal Crawford type who can score off the bench, and like people value that, they overvalue it. You know, because so few people can, you know, put up like 30 points coming off the bench, and he could stay around the league doing that. That is his ceiling, and the Knicks don't need that. There may be some other team that does if they can convince him of that. But again, yeah, the difference is Jamal is like he's a guy who kind of has his head on straight and he understands his role. So
he's likable, and Rose just, yeah. he isn't likable. And the whole
people love him. If you are on social media, there are people who love Derrick Rose and will completely lay into you if you criticize him. So
yes, that is true. I wrote over the summer, I wrote about why he's been overrated from the beginning, and we just didn't realize it now. And his MVP award like masked a lot of it, and he didn't deserve that MVP award. There was death threats on social media. People get one. It's sports, so that's always. Even as someone who writes about it and really cares about sports, it always amazes me when people get so involved that they get that angry. But that this is the hill you're going to die on, though, is the Derrick Rose hill. Yeah. Like, this is the player you're going to defend.
Like, people don't get that. Like, and I guess there are Derrick Rose fans in general who kind of migrated over to Knicks sites. But even there are some Knicks fans who are just like, this is it now. Oh, my God. This is what we've been waiting for. Like, they've learned nothing from the past 20 years of signings and trades. At the beginning, they're starting to come around, but at the beginning, when you said, oh, you know, Derrick Rose isn't really trying on defense, why do you hate him? Oh, he didn't do anything to you. He was proven innocent.
Oh, that's so God. Don't even get me started on that.
Yeah, innocent until proven guilty, or he was proven whatever. Yeah, the thing is, it was just all bad. It was just kind of bad mojo from the beginning. And Derrick Rose meant a lot to people. But I think Knicks fans are kind of starting to figure it out now. He's not good. And
that's a good way to put it. He's not good.
He's not good. I mean, he has a skill, and it is a useful skill.
Is it when he doesn't get to the foul line or pass or shoot threes like that? Like,
yeah, well, I mean, yeah, dribble penetration is a use. It is, I said, one skill. He has one skill. He can get to the basket. He doesn't finish or draw fouls, but it is a skill. It is an NBA skill. You know, it's like Raymond Felton.
Oh, God.
He had he had his skill. I don't even know what it was, but
being coached by Mike D'Antoni for a half season was probably his best skill.
Yeah,
I don't.
That's true.
The thing I hate actually is people talk about, but maybe not as many people talk about because I certainly don't talk about it. But how knowledgeable that New York fans are, and it still amazes me on the Knicks front how just name sloppy people are. Like they don't. Oh, Derrick Rose is here. They're like, he's so good. Like, we got a superstar. Have you not taken stock of the last half decade? And when you even looked at this roster, Noah's on the team. Like, look at these names. And people thought they were going to win 50 games or that they were going to be a top four team in the East. And it's just like...
Super team.
Yeah, well, Derrick Rose thought they were a super team. That guy's tone deaf. I don't even... You have to, like, to say that and some of the other stuff he's done, he's just tone deaf. But people... I never understood New Yorkers in this day and age where everything is so nuanced and a lot of other fan bases are smarter than this. New York as a whole just seems to fall in love with these sexy, splashy household names that they've heard of. And I don't understand it.
Yeah. I've always operated under the belief that no fan base is really smarter than another one. It just depends on what you've grown up watching. So Knicks fans, you know, if we grew up watching the Spurs for 20 years, we would probably be more interested in, like, you know, great bench players who, you know, have a variety of skills that fit perfectly with with the second unit, but we don't have that. We have Eddie Curry and Eric Rose, and so. But I mean, Knicks fan, and Knicks fans do appreciate a good bench player, so they're very bipolar. They love the very, very expensive player, and they love the last player on the bench.
Which the Knicks have been pretty good at finding over the years. Yeah. It's such an obscure skill of theirs relative. They can't hit on the big stuff, but you know, you date back, you find guys like Jeremy Lin or Chris Copeland, and you get guys like Kuz and Hernan Gomez. Like, they've made a lot of smart, like, under the radar moves. It's their supposedly splashy ones that have sucked.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at the Derrick Rose trade. There is one guy from the Derrick Rose trade who is valuable and they should absolutely resign. That's Justin Holiday. I would love for them to extend him because he has been very good for the Knicks this year. He does a lot of things for them. In some ways, he's a better passer than Rose. He just makes a lot of correct plays, and it's really wonderful to have that on the second unit. I mean, I wouldn't have traded so much just to get Justin Holiday, but I mean, he's the piece that they should, go forward with. I'm hoping, and you know, it doesn't hurt that his brother happens to be one of the best point guards coming up on the free agent market. So if you want to bring Drew and Justin together on the Knicks, I would certainly, I would be amenable.
But, And Drew's a guy who fits with Melo. He can play on and off the ball, and he passes.
Drew Holiday is pretty high up on my list of like point guards who I would love to get. But that's the thing. Like, if you look at the Nets game, or you look at most of their games, I mean, they have Kuz Minskis, who is he's just delightful, based on his social media and everything, but. he has shown some skill. I mean, he's a little raw still, and he's a little older, but he's like the fourth forward or whatever. He has shown some legitimate talent. Hernan Gomez is one of the best rookies, in the below Joel Embiid, a little muddled area down there. I mean, there are not many rookies right now playing better than Willie Hernan Gomez, and he's 22, and he's a legit piece to build around. Justin Holiday is quite good as a reserve player. They have like good guys, and not old guys either. They're a lot of these guys are. I mean, the oldest guys are 27, I think. So. They have like a stable of good backups, but their supposed the big five or whatever,
the super team.
The super team is their real fault. I was looking at this the other day. When this goes back to Noah, of course, but like if you look at their best pairings, all of their like top pairings by like net rating is like Justin Holiday. Kuz, Ron Baker, and Hernan Gomez with some of the starters, like, even a little Kylo Quinn. And it's just like, you have Kuz and Hernan Gomez outscore the opponents. Justin Holiday and Derrick Rose actually outscore the opponents by a lot. Like, Rose, Holiday, and Lee is... It, in limited minutes has been very effective. These are the guys, and that's why I really want them to break up the starting lineup. I don't even care who they take out at this point, but they do much better when they are mixing in those reserve players with the big five or whoever it is. You know, take some guys out, and they've done better when. They've done better when Noah's out. They've done better, when some of the starters are on the shelf. They've also done well when Lee was out and Holiday replaced him. I like Courtney Lee, but when they mix up this starting five, which has been horrible. I mean, they're way low on the list of five-man groups that have played together a lot of minutes. I mean, they're just getting killed.
Yeah, the starter I want to see moved would just be Noah. And I don't, the returns with Kristaps at the five and Melo at the four, they haven't been great on defense, but the Knicks are never going to be good on defense, and you might as well just try and blitz opponents on the offensive end. And you're never going to be good on defense unless you surround Rose with at least two very capable defensive wings. And yeah. I think you just talked about that trio, so maybe that's why.
Yeah. Holiday, Lee, and Rose. Yeah.
So that's,
that is, what is that? That's where it's at right there.
Yeah, I mean, you need to play. Ideally, though, who would be the starter? Is it Noah for you, or would you like the Knicks should try and sell Rose on a bench role, which would not go well, but just an idea.
No. And it's not like Brandon Jennings is great shakes, so I don't. Rose is fine. The Knicks have actually done pretty well on offense with Rose. And Jennings is just a, you know, like a ticking time bomb in every game. So it would probably be Noah for me. I wouldn't even mind Kristaps playing with the bench units just because he does better there and he just seems like he has more fun.
Because he gets the ball.
Yeah, playing with his guys, you know, Willie and Kuz. But Justin Holiday deserves it the most, I would say, based on his play. He deserves to be in the starting lineup.
I actually haven't looked at that lineup, but if you yank Noah and you just throw in Holiday, you move Lee up to small forward or Holiday small forward and you keep Mel at the four, Kristaps at the five, that seems like you might be able to get enough defense out of that five. Holiday's still kind of a wild card. He tries on that end, but he's still kind of a wild card. But you have Lee. Kristaps has almost become underrated on defense just because if you watch some of the situations he finds himself in, he shouldn't be in them. So like we talk about, yo, he needs to learn how to get up there and defend in space or defend around the arc. Like, well, you know, the Knicks could also put him at his natural position or he shouldn't have to
switch.
He's 7'3".
How many other 7'3" guys are like expected to do the things that he is expected to do? You know, you don't go up to, you know, Boban and be like, well, why aren't you defending point guard? Right. It's almost physically impossible for him to do that.
And most big men, even the ones that are kind of good at it, they struggle and they don't have to do it as much. And that's really where you lose a lot by putting him at the four because you're camping Noah out around the paint, which is pretty much all he can do. And that's where that's where Kristaps is getting screwed most. And this is probably a good segue into Kristaps because we haven't really talked about him. For everyone who says that the Knicks need to be all about Kristaps, I agree. I would argue, though, that both Rose and Noah have hindered his development more than Melo ever did / will.
No, I don't think Melo has ever hindered his development. I think
I love you.
Melo has always worked with him. He's learned a lot of moves from Melo on offense. Melo kind of took him under his wing right from the beginning. You know, right after the draft, was working out with him in the summer and took him to Puerto Rico. And
wait, it was. Let me interrupt. It was you that came up with Dad Melo, right?
Dad Melo.
That was a great.
Yeah.
Sorry, throw it back to happier times. Sorry.
And yeah, but Dad Melo was when Kristaps was a rookie. Melo was having his best year as a playmaker. You know, he led the team in assists last year. He was doing a lot of great stuff, and this year, it hasn't been there, and it just seems like. With Rose dominating the ball so much, Melo is just like, okay, when I get the ball, you know, he's the point guard. I'm the forward. I'm just going to score now. And it sucks. It sucks to watch.
Right.
It was better last year.
Yeah. And I mean, it comes back to that. If Rose passed him more, or if they, I guess, had better, let's call it chemistry if we want to cop out on Rose's behalf, but Melo might not get the urge to abandon plays or get in these isolations so much if he's getting more catch and shoot opportunities. He's one of the most lethal catch and shoot guys in the league. You just like when he catches it and he's firing within a second or two without having a dribble, that's the only play type of his career where I can remember like feeling this shot's going in. And that's the feeling you tend to get with great players. And Melo's never been that guy where there are nights where he shoots and you're like, oh, that's going in. But from a night-to-night basis, it fluctuates. But in those scenarios, when he's just firing right off the catch without having to dribble, just in my head, I get that feeling like, oh, that's probably going in.
Yeah, he's also always been good at trailing three pointers. I always feel like he's when he's the trail man and he gets the ball on the secondary break, he's gonna nail it. He has a knack for that. But yeah, it's just Melo. I don't really ever believe that Melo has hindered Kristaps, because I think if you put them both in their correct positions, they work very well together. Is it Melo's fault that he's playing at the three and Kristaps is playing at the four? You know, you hear a lot of stuff that he doesn't like to play power forward, so you don't know. But it's just they've always worked well together in the past. So yeah, I just the Rose thing, it just hasn't worked. The Noah thing, he had much better defensive chemistry with Robin Lopez. I know Lopez has had a bad year this year, but like they just clicked, the two of them, and they were awesome on defense together. And with Noah, they just don't have that chemistry.
Right, and Noah's defensive numbers are good when you look at the advanced metrics. The thing is, though, and I've looked on NBA Wowie, like if you ask him to play without Kristaps, like it doesn't work. Like, he needs Kristaps on the floor to have this positive impact, which kind of reinforces how important Porzingis is and how good he's still kind of been despite what the Knicks are doing.
I'm still his rim protection number
top five in the league.
Still good, I think. I haven't checked him in a while. But.
Yeah, when I don't know the percentage, but if you narrow it down to like people who contest like five shots per game, he's in the top five. So
yes, so I mean. He does what you want a very tall man to do.
And more. It's just the fact that Rose is taking more shots per game than him, and yet Kristaps is still the one who's averaging more points. Like that, it's stuff like that that just gets me. And you have to wonder what Phil Jackson was thinking. Even the people who like spun it as, well, he just wants extra cap space so that he can go after another point guard the following summer. One, you turned around and signed Joakim Noah, who cost way more than Robin Lopez.
Yeah.
And two, now we're at trade Melo. Like that's the thing I can't seem to wrap my head around. And even if you want to rebuild from the studs, trading Melo doesn't do that. Like, cause you still have Noah, you still have Lee, who yes, you can move, but you're not moving Noah. We don't know. Rose is still on the team. We don't know if they'll resign him. We assume not, but people look at it as like, Melo needs to go so that they can rebuild. Even if Melo was in some way hindering Porzingis' development, which, as you pointed out, he's not. Like you don't move him and you're not suddenly rebuilding. Like there's just so many other steps that need to be taken because of the way the Knicks assembled the rest of this roster. And the thing that pisses me off most, though, is people saying, "Well, like he's the reason they have all these contracts." Phil's a big boy executive. If he's going to go after Noah, trade for Rose, shell out these deals because Melo's window to win is now, like you can tell Melo, like, we're doing this, like what you're trying to do now. So like that argument doesn't even have weight anymore, that the Knicks feel this sense of urgency because of him, because it's their job not to feel that urgency as an executive. And two, now they're trying to move him, which they could have done before signing Noah or trading for Rose.
Yeah, I mean, it was a terrible free agent class for point guards. If you look back at last year's team, one of their almost their number one problem was shooting guard. Aaron Aflalo was just god awful, and by replacing Aflalo with Courtney Lee, and just kind of rolling. That group with Aflalo in place of Lee. I mean, I would have rather watched that. So,
yeah. I mean, give me the extra year of Jose Calderon at this point. Like, I just, at least he passed and could shoot threes.
Yeah. Well, I guess he's been injured the whole year, but whatever.
Well, that might
give
them, helped.
Give me another year of Jerry and Grant. Like, at least try to make something out of him. And it's just dumb.
He doesn't look good with the Bulls, but the Bulls, they're just a giant clump. Their floor spacing is so bad.
Yeah. So I, and he also, I mean, he defends like better than any point guard on the Knicks roster now. So he would have more use with the Knicks, I would say. And again, he might never amount to anything. He might not even be a backup in, you know, a couple of years. I don't care. Just like
try it.
Try. Yeah.
And it was good to get him. Like, remember Tim Hardaway Jr.'s value. It might be a little higher now, but it was baseboard low when they dealt him, and they still got a first round pick. So you look at that trade, and that's the one that people point toward. Like, Phil did a really good job. And when I think a report came out earlier this season where it said the Knicks won't trade draft picks, and I saw someone, a verified account, I think it was, I can't remember, someone legit, but was like, it's refreshing to see an executive in New York take this stance. Phil not only traded Jaren Grant already, but he used Amon Shumpert as a sweetener so that the Cavs would take on J.R. Smith's contract, which wasn't even terrible because you knew he was going to be a free agent at season's end.
Yeah, the J.R. thing in hindsight, like, he became so good playing with LeBron, of course, and he started to mature. But people forget how just, like, god-awful he was that last season.
But the deal.
I didn't mind that as much because, yeah, Shumpert had kind of played out his time in New York. And even, like, last year, when he was healthy, you know, Lance Thomas, who they got for him, was a good player, so...
That's fair. I forgot about Lance Thomas. But even if we're in a vacuum, like, give me crappy JR for that, like, other year than, I guess, rather than just dealing away... Like, it just seems like... Even the Tyson Chandler trade wasn't that good, and it just seems like that Jackson's track record was getting buoyed for so long, and I just don't... And we've had this conversation before. He doesn't deserve... How much credit does he deserve for drafting Porzingis? There's a level where it's like, all right, he needed to have the guts to pull the trigger on that pick. Yeah. But didn't – if Jahlil Okafor, would he have taken him if he had his way?
Oh, yeah. He said he would.
Right.
God, he's insane about what he is so bluntly honest about. The one thing that is booing him right now is the and he should thank God, he should be telling Hornacek to play him all the time, is the Hernan Gomez trade. That is his new, like, basically Jerry and Grant for Tim Hardaway. He got Hernan Gomez, who is, I mean, if you watch them, he is legitimately better than Jahlil Okafor in the second round from the Sixers for 2 second-round picks. And, like, that trade is an absolute steal right now. I mean, people don't want to, you know, this is my hot take. I would not trade Hernan Gomez straight up for Okafor right now.
No, why would you? Like, it's no, just...
Yeah. So, you know, the Knicks wound up with two big men better than the guys the Sixers got for at number 3. And they actually... like, got the big man that the Sixers drafted, the superior one. They got him for 2 second-round picks. So that is right now his saving grace. That 2015 draft was his, like, shining achievement. And that was the funny thing, is he was like, he distanced himself from Grant so quickly. It was just like, outside of that night, what has he done?
Right, and the Hernan Gomez addition was just phenomenal. But here's the flip side for me. Did you see any potential whatsoever in Hernan Gomez that you felt it necessary to go out and give Joakim Noah $72 million when you already had Kristaps on the roster? You had O'Quinn, who can play some center too, is probably better off at center at this point. So, like, things like that kind of get me. It's like, okay, cool, he got Porzingis, but now he's pigeonholed him to the four for the next 3 or 4 years.
Well, I absolutely did not see Hernan Gomez being this good this quickly or this good ever. So, I mean, I would have just preferred them to, even after trading Rose, just, or even if they were going to give Noah a contract, who is going to give him 4 years?
Right,
even if they went for two, even if he was useless for 2 years, it's not like a killer. But four, it was just, I mean, that had to have been 2 years more than any other team was offering.
Right. I don't know who they were bidding against. I know the Wizards were linked to him for a minute, but there was no way. In the, like, Jan Mahimi was the better free agent they at the time. He's been injured now, but they gave him less money than Noah got from the Knicks. So that they were bidding against no one in my mind. Like, I don't, and they signed him so quickly. Like, he was one of the first, like, Knicks, have, we knew it was happening before free agency even started. So
yeah,
that it's just that continues to boggle my mind. But to big picture this, it are they can they be with this roster any better than they are right now? 22-29, just outside the Eastern Conference playoff picture.
You mean this year?
Yeah. Is this team, I'm not even talking about playoffs, but can they be like, is this their ceiling? Just that roller coaster team that's gonna never get to 500 or close to it again?
Well, I don't think they're going to get to 500, but they can be better. I don't think that they have been playing their better guys the proper minutes. And you've seen that in recent, the last couple of weeks, they played much better. Their record's still right around, what are they, like 3-4 in their last seven?
Yeah.
But they have played legitimately, like, much better basketball. And they have been playing Hernan Gomez more. They've been playing Justin Holiday more. You know, they relied on Courtney Lee a little bit more, you know, to shoot, which is better since he shoots a very high percentage. And they toss in Ron Baker every once in a while when he's, you know, when he's feeling frisky. And it is, I mean, are these guys world beaters? No, but they're better. They're doing a better job than the people who have been playing before. So they deserve more minutes, and they've been getting them recently, and the Knicks have been playing better. I don't know how much better they can play, but a lot of it depends on Kristaps. How, you know, is he hurt? Is he just running out of gas? But they can absolutely play better. I don't think their ceiling is high, but the East is, I mean, God, everyone in the East, it's amazing how bad everyone's.
The Knicks are 1.5 games out of the playoffs entering Friday. Yeah. That's absurd.
I mean, like, yeah, and it's not only that those other teams are like the Bucks and the Hornets and all them, they're like cratering. The Knicks have beaten all of them recently. I think. I mean, they beat the Pacers in Indiana. They beat the Bucks in Milwaukee.
They
beat the Hornets.
They beat the Bulls. They
crushed the Bulls both times they played them. It's, I mean, it's really, they're just a weird ass team. They're just weird.
They're not.
And like I said, just based on how, you know, if Hornacek, he hasn't seemed to be really consistent. If he can get consistent play and, you know, all it takes is like a 4-game winning streak in this conference.
So. Yeah. I mean, if they can ever rattle, like, they're just, the thing that gets me with them is, they're just not going to improve defensively. And every time I see that they rank 24th in defensive efficiency or 23rd, they've been vastly, like, I'm pleasantly surprised, because watching them, and even when I watch teams like the, okay, yeah, the Nets and the Lakers, like, they've been really bad on defense. But when I watch like the Nuggets and the Kings and the Suns and the Blazers and these teams that are below them in defensive efficiency right now, like, I don't get that that hopeless feeling for their defense. Just by watching the Knicks, they're just, they're a collective turnstile, and they fold so easily. And I don't think, you know, maybe the change we talked about where you pull out Noah and you throw in Holiday, like, that gives you a little more versatility. It's easier to switch. We've even seen when Baker's on the court, sometimes they look a lot better defensively because he switches so well relative.
Yeah,
he to
switches Rose. Well. And he also just like stops. He just like stops the ball. I mean, you know what I mean? He's just, He's not going for steals all the time like Jennings and Rose are, and he just stays in front of the ball handler. I mean, it's not rocket science. Sometimes they just kind of ole and just let the guy go past, or they just get stuck on screens for, you know, 15 seconds. So just a guy who shows up and doesn't do that helps the offense immeasurably. So, and again, I don't think, you're right, they will not improve on defense. I think their offense has a much higher ceiling than what they've shown. And if they are willing to you know, do that. And that honestly probably means playing Noah a lot less, playing Chris Stapps at the five, playing Willie, maybe sprinkling in O'Quinn a little bit. But I mean, what is Noah giving you on offense?
Nothing. He's still a pretty good passer, but he can't move with the ball, so that limits his passing abilities.
Yeah, and nobody they play like 5 feet off of him anyway, so it's hard to pass when everyone's playing you to pass.
And the Knicks, this is the other thing that gets me, as the many things I think I've said get me like a million times this podcast, but their off-ball movement is so bad. We talk about Melo being in isolation, but like there's one of two things that are happening here. Either he's abandoning the set and his teammates are allowing him because they're just standing there, or that's the actual plan, which is so scary to think about. But they watch him, and it's even with when Rose is driving, they're so immobile. And if you were just had one guy in motion a lot off the ball, like Courtney Lee does a nice job of this a lot, or at least when he's on the break or getting up the floor, he does a great job of finding the corners. Like the Knicks in general just don't, and even Melo, he's okay when he's not on the ball and he's coming up the floor, but everyone when they're in the half court is so stationary. That's why you can look at and be like, hey, their offense could be a lot better because they're not doing a fundamental thing.
And that's why Willie and Kuz have it really improved their offense, because they go to the correct spots a lot of the time, and a lot of the other guys don't. I remember a play from a couple of games ago where like it was late in the fourth, I think, and Willie went to the short corner. Now he's not it was against the Hornets, I think. He's not going to shoot from there, but he was in the proper spot for someone on his spot in the court. He was in the corner, and I think maybe it was Lee threw him a pass, and just by him being in the right position, it threw the defense out of whack. You know, a guy ran over to him just because they're so used to running at the guy in the corner, and he threw it over either the Holiday or Jennings or something for a wide open three. So, you know, it's just stuff like that. Stand in the right place, go to the right spot, get down the court and set a screen, move around, cut. There are guys that do that. They haven't been playing until recently. And the Knicks did just have their best offensive month by net rating.
Oh, what was scary? You told me this before the podcast.
Oh,
you need to drop that stat.
The number one stat that will destroy the brains of Knicks fans everywhere. By net rating, the month of January, where they were 5-12, was their best month of the season. I think they were negative 2.7.
It's disgusting.
And even in November, when they were 8-8, their net rating was like negative 2.8. So...
They did have a lot of close games in January, which definitely helped them. And that random destruction of the Celtics and the Bulls, those two wins, I just didn't see either of those coming.
Yeah, I mean, they have played more consistently recently. Now they have totally screwed the pooch late in the fourth in most of those games, which the Knicks do. But, you know, give me consistently okay basketball as opposed to before, when they were supposedly good, they were, you know, getting blown out, but also, you know, every time it was a close game, they kind of, you know, Melo would hit a shot or Rose would hit a shot, and you know, they were just kind of getting by, but they were most of the time getting manhandled. It has been better recently. I don't think it's going to be good enough, but they are making some strides, and they have some good young players who are playing more and playing pretty well. It's just the big picture guys who are just destroying them.
So to kind of bring this all together, my final question, and playoffs or not for this team, do you think they're a game and a half out right now, which is why I think it's a fair question.
It is fair.
Well, I guess the first question would be, do you think they're going to trade Melo? We're both in agreement that it's not going to happen during the season. So, two, Do you think that they're going to get into the playoffs, or do you think that they're even going to get to 9 and finish the season there? Like, do you think it's going to be that close?
I hope not. I mean, 9 would be the worst spot for them. I mean, I wouldn't mind them getting to the playoffs. You know, seeing Kristaps in a postseason series would be delightful, even if they got their asses kicked. But like getting close and finishing like higher up, like around like 12th or 11th, which I think they're at 11th right now in the Tankathon ratings.
And the Heat are game and a half behind them. And even scarier still, the Sixers are only 3 games behind them.
Yeah. So like I said, I would rather, you know, if they're going to, I would rather them tank, but.
Shut Melo down with a shoulder injury or something. But at the same time, can you? You're a game and a half out.
You can't do that. And this is why I'm scared that this is going to be one of those, like, during the Isaiah years where they always tended to finish, like, one spot too high in the draft to pick the impact player. So I feel like, you know, if there's 10 quality guys in this draft coming up, they'll finish 11th.
Yeah, there's like 5 good point guards, and they're gonna draft.
They're gonna miss them all. They're gonna miss them all. I guarantee you. I feel it, but it seems like it's a pretty deep draft. But they're gonna screw it up somehow. So whatever, man. Yeah, just like play Willie, play Kristaps, play these guys. You know, this wacky Motley Crue, and
that would also be the real way to get Melo to. He said it, like, if they said they want to rebuild now, but like, and he says it exasperatedly, like, well, they could have come to me and said, I thought they were rebuilding the last 2 or 3 years, and now all of a sudden we have no one rose. But if you're playing the younger guys more, like, show you're committed to rebuilding then. Don't just throw Melo's name in the trade rumors and use him as this scapegoat. Like, show it. Play the young guys, like you said, especially because the young guys are playing well.
Yeah. And they're legitimately, I mean, some of the older guys on this team have been so bad that there's no upside other than you just kind of praying that they recapture their youth. And that's a losing bet.
Joakim Noah is proof.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I would like to thank you for coming on. It was a blast to talk Knicks, even if it was a little bit depressing.
I think it was not as depressing as it could be. They, like I said recently, Willie has really
he's shouldering the hopes of the franchise all of a sudden.
Yeah, all of a sudden he's the new Bilt Chamberlain, as I call him.
Well, if you guys want to talk to Joe more, definitely read his work over at postingandtoasting.com. His stuff is fantastic when he publishes. And if you want to talk to him on Twitter, he is at China Joe Flynn. His last name is FLYNN. The rest of the handle is spelt like it sounds. If you want to talk to me, I am at Dan Favale, FAVALE. If you want to talk to Adam Frommel, he is at Frommel09, FROMAL09. There, Andy Bailey can be found at Andrew D. Bailey, spelled like it sounds. All of us can be found, with the exception of Joe, at the Hardwood Knox Twitter handle. That will be all. Thank you guys for listening. Until next time.